The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and John Gregg. Lots to get to this weekend as there's a doings a transpiring in Major League Baseball. Blue Jays making another move. They've been the most active, actually, I would say, this Major League Baseball offseason. Already re-signing Marco Estrada, who is technically a free agent signing. And they've done it again. Two starters added now as they ink Jay Happ to a three-year deal worth $36 million. So everybody, everything old is new again because Jesse Chavez, former Blue Jay, he returns. Jay Happ, former Blue Jay, he returns. So there is speculation. I don't even know if you can call it speculation because it's pretty obvious that, yes, this means, and I don't know if it's a direct correlation, probably not. The Blue Jays will not be in on David Price. I don't know if they were ever in on David Price, but this move appears to make it official that the guy that was so good for the Blue Jays after being acquired at the non-waiver trade deadline is going to be moving on somewhere else. And John, it's a lot of fans are reacting negatively, partly in due to the fact that they saw Jay Happ when he was here, and he's not... It's not David Price, and only David Price is David Price, and David Price is not coming back.
Who would have thought that Jay Happ would be the reason that David Price is no longer going to be a Blue Jay?
Yeah, that's maybe oversimplifying it, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, can you get excited about Jay Happ? Is it a sexy signing? No, it's not, of course. You know, he's an end-of-the-rotation type of guy, but he showed flashes last year of being maybe better than that. He comes at, you know, relatively cheap at a decent term, and
I think that's debatable, the relatively cheap part.
Well, if he's a 30 start, you know, 3.5 ERA type guy, then he's pretty cheap, right?
Oh, well, yeah. And that's the dream scenario, though.
No, I know. But, I mean, he had a 1.85 ERA, I think, last year in Pittsburgh, the final at the end of the season. He's one of the best starters in the National League at the end of the season.
Yeah, and 11 starts.
Yeah, no, I know. Small sample size. And I know he lost a couple of games to the Cubs, and I think he was 1-1 against St. Louis, and he kind of beat up on the Cincinnati's and Colorado's of the world. But, I mean, yeah, he's not David Price, and I fully understand as both a fan and for fans that, you know, what you want is the prices of this world. Simple fact is this team has a budget and you can't blow it on a 30-year-old starter. Those contracts never work out.
Ryan, so Jay Happ, like I said, we all remember his tenure, his first go round here with the Blue Jays. They traded for him. He was a guy that Alex Anthopoulos was really high on for a long period of time and eventually did figure out a way to prime away from the Houston Astros. So if this is, and again, it's not even December yet, but if this is the rotation on opening day, Stroman, Estrada, Dickey, Happ, Chavez, and then Hutchison waiting in the wings, maybe you give Aaron Sanchez a shot to be a starter beginning of the season. Is that good enough?
It could be good enough. Excuse me. I think, too, one of the overlooked aspects is we haven't seen Marcus Stroman for a full year, especially right in that, hey, bud, here's the ball, you're the guy role. So we've certainly seen some great stuff from Stroman. I don't know that there's any reason to believe he can't be a number one starter and anchor of the rotation other than it just hasn't happened yet. He's someone who pitched how many starts did he get last year? Coming back, I guess, mid-September. And then the year prior, jumping up probably in, you know, June or July, I suppose. So you don't know exactly what you're going to get from the guy who is recognized as the best on your staff. It's like you said with Happ, John outlined the dream scenario. I suppose if you get more of the dream scenario from you know, Hutchison bounces back. Everyone's kind of written off Drew Hutchison, but really there's some evidence to suggest that he's going to be, he can still be a contributing member of a staff and maybe a pretty good one. Dickey, people are probably too quick to remember him blowing up against KC, but guy was a valuable member of the rotation last year from about June on. So can you see a world where things work out? Yes, it's just not the same as if you had Price coming back or someone in that realm who you could look at and go number one, or even a clear number one, number two guy on anyone's staff.
And again, it's we don't know for sure that they're done here yet. There may be another domino to fall here. Maybe a trade that takes place. Maybe there's still a signing. And maybe it's a situation where you can push Jesse Chavez into that swingman role, that sixth starter guy who's in the bullpen, who can be stretched out, who's a long man, who can step into the rotation at any time. I wouldn't be surprised if this is what it is to start the season, opening day. People are going to talk about dollars, right? People are going to talk about, hey, why didn't you just double down on the season that was? You just won the American League East with David Price. Why wouldn't you just take all that goodwill, throw it into $200 million in 7 years of David Price? It's
because those contracts don't work. I mean, look at any of them going back all the way to Kevin Brown.
But they don't work if you judge them on, do you get full value for the guy for every single inning that he ever pitches for you? They work out if you sign a guy and you win the World Series and you dine out on that for the next 10 years. Like for the Chicago Cubs to say, if they swoop in and sign David Price and win the World Series in the next 3 years, nobody in Chicago is going to care if in 2021 he is going out there and serving up.
But,
you know,
but Chicago's not a budget team.
That's the thing. Like they can make up for that mistake.
For all the success that this team has had on the field, and for all the millions of Canadians watching on TV and the millions of Canadians clicking on sportsnet.ca for any news on anything, for all the swag that was sold, this is still a budget team that's being run as a business and as part of a larger business. And 4 years down the road, when David Price has lost 2 or 3 miles an hour off of his fastball and he can't get guys out like he could this year, at least during the regular season, you can't be spending that much of your budget on a guy who's not worth it. It's a business, which is sad to say, and it's too bad, but it's reality.
If it was a guarantee, if you said, hey, for sure, you're going to at least be in a World Series.
Sure.
But there are no guarantees.
But that doesn't exist in sports.
Right.
You have to make a strong play and say, we think we're here. We think this is going to push us into this realm where realistically we're one of six teams at the start of the year you can look at and go, yeah, this team can do it.
Aren't they still there? I think they are.
You got to think that they're still there with that offense.
Here's the thing, right? I said at the beginning of this season that this team just needed mediocre starting pitching to get by and be a real good team and maybe a division winner. Beginning of the season, they were not getting decent or even mediocre pitching. They were getting horrible starting pitching and horrible relief pitching. And as a result, I mean, it lasted almost right up until the non-waiver trade deadline. They were 50-51, remember?
Well, and I think, you know, you touched on it there with relief pitching. If you do go out and sign Price to 7 years, $200 million, and you've spent that much money on a guy who pitches every 5 days, and for the other 4 days, you got nobody in your bullpen who can get anybody out, and if your starters don't go eight or seven and a third, you're screwed. I mean, I think with a great offense, okay pitching, like starting pitching, and a good bullpen, this could be a good team. But you just can't spend all that budget on one guy and take away from everywhere else on the field.
Well, and that's another part of this rotation as it stands right now. None of these guys give you length, right? Like maybe Marcus Stroman does, and R.A. Dickey can at least throw 120 pitches, even if he's given up a bunch of runs, if you need him to do that. But that's another part of what we remember from J-Hap's tenure as a Blue Jay. The guy had difficulty just getting into the sixth inning, and when he did, he was at 115 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're banking on is that what they saw in 11 starts with a couple of tweaks to the delivery and, you know, relying more on a four-seam fastball and pounding the strike zone and not being afraid to challenge hitters, that's what Hap dined out on with Pittsburgh last year, and that's what they're hoping for this year. And if he could become a reliable 4-5, maybe a 3, like who knows, then it's worth your money. And then and then maybe you don't have to worry about getting all the way to the 7th every time with him. You know, if you can spend some of that extra money and go out and get a guy who can come in and be a reliable reliever in the 6th, 7th inning, so that Drew Hutchinson doesn't have to get through the lineup 3 times, and guys like Hap aren't under pressure to go 7 innings or 8 innings. They just need to get through 5 1/3 or 6. You might be all right. You might be all right. And I mean, Kansas City proved that last year, right?
Yeah. I mean, their rotation to start the season was not great. I mean, Jeremy Guthrie was a big part of it. Chris Young ended up being a big part of their playoff rotation. But it raises the question you touched on it, and Fangraphs has a great piece out on what exactly changed for J-Hap when he went to Pittsburgh for those 11 starts after being dealt from the Mariners, and he was not good as a Mariner. Are we buying on the changes being real? Because it seems the Blue Jays are, that they believe he's not the guy who had an ERA approaching 5 in a pretty good pitcher's ballpark in Seattle. They're buying on the guy who was throwing more fastballs, who was throwing more strikes for 11 starts in Pittsburgh. Is that enough of a sample size? Are the numbers enough to suggest to you that this is now a new J-Hap? And is it not a situation where we've heard this before? And it almost sounds like spring training, like, right? Like, best shape of my life. I made big changes. I'm a different guy this year.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's not a large enough sample size. The Jays are banking on it.
They're hoping that he's this year's Estrada, right? The guy who they got last year at this time, who no one gave a second thought to. And
they didn't, probably.
Sure, exactly. Hoping Estrada is this year's Estrada, yeah. So we'll see.
I actually did write down Hap's name yesterday.
Yeah.
When kind of looking around at some names, you know, kind of prepping for this show.
Why didn't you write down David Price?
Because
he's on a budget.
The point I was making at the time was stay away from guys like Price. Try and go after the more controllable younger guys, which has been this team's MO in the past, with more upside, who you've got for longer on better contracts. And, you know, it seems like that is not going to happen now because they've gone out and made this signing, and they're I guess happy with the rotation, the way it at least starts the season. Who knows what happens midseason or at the deadline, but you know, I just don't think you spend that kind of money on a David Price. It's just not going to be worth it long term.
You should try when you go home today writing down Babe Ruth's name and see how deep your powers run. Like, if you can wake the dead, I'll be real impressed.
He'll be the new GM.
I'd be happy with guys like Carlos Carrasco.
Yeah, well, that one's a tough one. Because that's going to require a trade and for a lot as well, because the guy's under a real good team-friendly contract. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Grigg, Ryan Dixon, J-Hap, a Blue Jay again, 3 years, $36 million, and you raised the point about the bullpen and how it affects the bullpen, which is, I think, in reading the tea leaves and understanding the quotes coming out of the mouth of Tony LaCava, certainly Roberto Osuna was expected to head back to the bullpen this year because the guy's just a couple of years removed from Tommy John surgery, wasn't going to be able to even throw 150 innings probably as a starter this year.
Who else do you have to close anyway?
Right.
I mean, the kid showed he could do it, so mm-hmm. Let him do it.
So he's back there. Looks like Aaron Sanchez is back there as well. And remember, as rocky as a couple of his starts were last year, he was this team's best starter when he got hurt last year. Really looked like he was turning into a valuable starter. But maybe he's a guy that can't stay healthy in the rotation. Maybe he's a guy who can't get lefties out. Either way, it seems that the plan is to keep him back there. Brett Cecil emerged as not just one of this team's best relievers, one of the best relievers in all of baseball last year, and it was a huge loss when he went down in the playoffs. He's going to be back and healthy. They're probably not done there, but that's three pretty reliable, good arms in the back of your bullpen. Is that enough, Ryan?
I think it's a great starting point. You saw, as you mentioned, I mean, Osuna seems to have a little bit of the it factor when it comes to closing the games. I mean, that's huge. I think just for the mentality of a team, knowing that you're handing the ball to a guy who has that fight in him and has the stuff to go out there and just blow teams away. So, yeah, you're looking at three pretty good pieces there, and all of a sudden you're in a world where you don't have to do any major surgery. You just need to go out and make a tweak here or there, and all of a sudden you're in that realm where, as we said, in general, as long as to some degree, as long as the pitching isn't killing them, they're going to be okay, right?
If it, from a fan's perspective, I am disappointed by the notion that Aaron Sanchez is not going to be a starter for this team. I think that's the way everybody envisions him. That's the way the organization envisioned him until he got hurt last year. And now it feels like we are slotting him into an eighth inning role where he's going to pitch, you know, four or five times a week for an inning, maybe a couple innings. And meanwhile, we're stuck with Drew Hutchinson and Jesse Chavez in the starting rotation. Like, doesn't this kid have electric stuff? Isn't this the kid with the 98-mile-an-hour fastball that nobody can touch? Why would you want him to be relegated, basically, to a second-tier role when you are desperate for starting pitching?
Well, it's an interesting point. Is that a scenario that the Blue Jays should be looking at? And maybe they are. Bringing in another reliever, bringing back Mark Lowe.
They need like four more relievers. Yeah. Like, let's not forget, Mark Lowe is probably gone. LaTroy Hawkins has retired. Mm-hmm. They just traded Liam Hendricks. Mm-hmm. That's three of guys who were their most effective relievers last year for them by the end of the season. You know, Hendricks, you probably got rid of him when he was worth the most, which is always a smart move. But the other guys, you know, how are you replacing those guys? Who, Ben, you know better than me, like, who is in the organization that's going to replace all those guys who you need to pitch, especially as we just touched on? You don't have anybody in your starting rotation who can go eight innings.
Well, the Blue Jays no longer have those young starters percolating just below the surface, right? Like, gone is Daniel Norris. Gone is Matt Boyd. Gone is Jeff Hoffman, who would have been a guy who would have been in strong consideration, if not to make this rotation this year, to be in the back end of the bullpen throwing 100 miles an hour. He's gone. So, I don't know. But
it's okay because we're dining out on the ALDS, right?
Maybe. Or the ALCS arriving there.
Well, I mean winning the ALDS.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it was all worth it. So, same with sign David Price and win one World Series and then throw caution to the wind.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
I'll get to that in just a second. But as far as the bullpen and what you're talking about, depth of relievers, I think when you get into your fourth, fifth, sixth relievers, I mean, it's not if your 1-2-3 is Osuna, Sanchez, and Cecil, you can get by with Bo Schultz and Aaron Loop and those other guys. They're not going to be pitching in one run games in the eighth inning, right? Like, you're looking at those guys coming up in either mop up roles or in the sixth inning when a starter's not giving you depth, which might actually be a valuable role on this team.
That's what I'm saying, though. It, as we've said, the rotation is questionable at best right now. And even if everybody's performing up to snuff, most of those guys do not have a history of getting through six or seven innings, mm-hmm. which means unless you're just rolling like Osuna and Sanchez and Cecil out there 7 days a week, you need some depth in that bullpen to make sure that, you know, those 6-4 leads that you have through five actually can hold up and you're not relying on 10-8 wins every single day.
Which was an issue for this team beginning of last season. I want to get to what you were talking about earlier, though. Are there too many ifs on this team? Like, for a team that just won the American League East, that is expected to be one of the favorites to emerge out of the American League this year. They were two games away from doing it this year. Are there too many ifs? We've seen this pay off. I mean, I would have said there was too many ifs in the Royals rotation to start last season. I would have even said there were too many ifs in the Blue Jays rotation to start last season. And I guess there were, because they changed it a whole bunch second half of the season. It kind of reminds me, and I got a tweet to this regard yesterday. It reminds me of what the Red Sox were trying to do last season in
five number threes.
Right. Bludgeon people to death, but throw your half-decent starters every day. Now it blew up spectacularly, and they had like horrible performances. Rick Porcello and Joe Kelly, they couldn't figure it out. I don't know. Are there too many question marks for a team that should be a shoe-in for 90-plus wins?
Well, it is tough because you had that signature piece coming over in Price and things worked so well. You know, you kind of you get accustomed to it so quickly as a fan or even as a member of the team having that presence around. And the reality is probably from the day he was acquired, you know, this was likely going to be a short-term relationship, but inevitably you're going to compare what you're looking ahead to having that, and that, you know, it's not the same things. But as we've been going up and down the lineup, yes, we know there are question marks on the staff, on both ends of the staff, but really there's also a lot to work with. There's also a pretty good starting point. So I have to believe that the overwhelming majority of teams start the year with a number of question marks and you address them, you know, typically I think teams wait a couple months, see how things are going. And if things are going the way you're hoping, then there is that opportunity to go out. Now the Blue Jays aren't going to be able to do what they did last year, clearly, because they've already spent so much of their prospect capital and you just can't get in the business of going out and getting a hired gun every year. But for sure there are question marks, and no doubt the complexion of not just staff, but I feel like team is very different when you don't have someone like David Price at the top, but they're also starting at a pretty decent point.
I think too, you have to, when it comes to ifs and question marks, let's not forget about the AL East. Like the Boston Red Sox are going to go out. They might end up with David Price or
like
Zach Greinke or Jordan Zimmermann or
someone,
somebody, at least one of them, at least one big splash. And they've got some good young ball players in the field on that team. I mean, the Yankees are still the Yankees. They're not the Yankees of old spending, you know, they're not the evil empire Yankees, but they're still a team that will go out and spend money. And they're looking to make a splash by all accounts in the trade market even. So, I mean, you know, last year, yes, the Blue Jays caught fire and zipped past New York, no problem. But Boston was crap, and they're not going to be crap again. And you know, so I think in terms of ifs, you got the big ifs out there are your opponents as well as your own roster. And I don't think people should forget about that.
Well, and we all expect this rollover, carryover effect of the postseason to carry over into attendance numbers, right? And maybe not getting to 4 million fans because that's ridiculous, but drawing 30,000, 35,000 plus to midweek games, which this team got to at the end of the season. You couldn't find a ticket for, you know, middle of the week against the Oakland A's. I guess it all depends on wins and losses. If this team was starting J-Hap every day and they were winning every game and they were winning 110 games a season, all would be good and all would be forgiven. And maybe I'm wrong in taking the temperature through Twitter of the fan base, because maybe that's not the right way to do it. But people don't seem pleased, Ryan.
I think it comes back to it's hard to get a taste for something and then see that leave town. You know, it's tough to go from, oh, yeah, we're dining out on filet, and then being like, all right, back to no matter what, whatever
Hungry
you put.
Man.
Yeah, whatever you eat next is going to seem like ground beef. And, it, you know, number one, yes, back away from the Twitter probably is a good start.
But it's
and
so fun.
I think when the smoke clears a little bit and everyone's still kind of intoxicated from what happened still a relatively short time ago, they're going to look at the team and go, it's a good team. It's very hard to imagine a scenario where they're not competitive in their division. It seems like there's a really good chance it will once again be contending hard to win the division. And I mean, especially given how, you know, the last time the Blue Jays, you could look at the beginning of the year and say, oh, you know, again, they're going to compete for a division title. It's been a while. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, but if anything, you know, they're going to be exciting. Assuming that everybody stays healthy, all the bats stay healthy, then, you know, this team could hit. Like, we know that. You know, I think there's some you know, there's Ben Revere in left field. Will he be back? Can Devin Travis ever stay healthy? Is Troy Tulowitzki happy? Is Edwin Encarnacion going to get it? Start showing his age. Same with Bautista. These are all questions that we won't know until we get into it. I will be interested to see if all this goodwill that's being built up or was built up during the season and into the playoffs lasts if this team comes out of the gate with a crappy April or a crappy May. And, you know, Alex Anthopoulos is gone and everybody hated that. And they didn't re-sign David Price and everybody hated that. And now they're 25-25 and they're four games out already in the AL East and things are sputtering and the rotation sucks. Like, will the fans continue to show up in droves, watch in massive numbers? Will the interest level be there?
It's a good question, because even last year, I mean, they won the American League East last year. Drew Hutchison started on opening day. There were seven games under 500 early in the season. There were real legitimate questions about the future of John Gibbons going into that doubleheader against the Washington Nationals, and then you have Kevin Pillar hitting a couple of home runs off Max Scherzer. The whole season turns around, and I feel like, covering this team and being in this seat as often as I have over the last, number of Blue Jays seasons.
Say it. It's 10.
It's a lot. It's a lot of seasons. People forget, like, so quickly do they forget that you're not totally sunk and that the season is 162 games long.
Absolutely.
Like, even at 50-51.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Who would have said this team was winning 90-plus games, winning the American League East, and being two wins away from the World Series?
But you know what you're going to get next year is the in-between version. You're going to get a better version than what you saw until August, and you're not going to get the team you saw in August and September.
Yeah,
it's going to even out to 89 wins, and maybe that puts you in the one-game playoff.
And in the quintessential Canadian way, it'll be cautious optimism,
right?
Like, everybody will be like, yeah, let's go root on our boys, but we're not going to get too excited, not yet at least.
And something tells me that they're not done with large moves. There could be another one on the horizon, because, again, we're not even into December. We haven't even been to the winter meetings yet. But the Blue Jays at least have enough starters to fill out a major league rotation at the moment. Who knows if all five guys are there on opening day. When we return, Raptors get back to work. They've won three straight after wrapping up that Western road trip with a couple of wins in LA against the Lakers and Clippers, but everybody beats the Lakers. And kind of a lot of people beat the Clippers more than we thought would beat them this year. And a big win over LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, this being done without Jonas Valanciunas. What does it all mean? We discuss coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon, John Gregg. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine, here's Dave Serum.
When you reach the end of the corridor, past the shelves of ancient Latin texts and the stuffy old academics eyeing you if your shoes make too much noise, hang a right and head up the two flights of stairs until you reach the third floor. Go through the double doors and into Cambridge University Library's reading room. Now sign your name in the logbook, check your belongings in a locker, and pass through the electronic security gates. Yes, it's a jarring nod to modernity in a library that dates back to the Middle Ages. But from there, you'll find a small metal box containing the 130-year-old minute book of the Cambridge University Ice Hockey Club, a well-worn leather journal, the first entry reading, January, 1885, St. Moritz, Switzerland, Oxford 6, Cambridge 0. It's the oldest living document of hockey's first and oldest rivalry, the annual Cambridge versus Oxford varsity game. But what the book can't begin to describe is the intensity of the action that's unfolded in the 13 decades since, and how that passion has quietly shaped the sporting culture of two continents an ocean apart. Even the oldest records of the Oxford-Cambridge feud can't show the full history. But today, team alumni on both sides are trying to untangle the story and, as a byproduct, the true origins of Canada's game.
The path is clear, though no eyes can see. The course laid down long before.
That's story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, John Gregg, Ryan Dixon. Toronto Raptors with a fine Western road trip. It started off so poorly with three straight wins, Sacramento, Golden State, and Utah, even though they had a chance to beat the Warriors, become the first team this season to beat the Warriors, and still unbeaten. They may not lose, but referees intervened there, blew fourth quarter leads in both Utah and Sacramento. Then they salvaged the trip with two wins. Lakers one was kind of a layup, a little closer than they would have liked, but an 11-point victory. Then they stay in L.A., don't have to leave the hotel. And then they beat the Clippers, who are kind of a team in a bit of turmoil as well. Then they come home, which is, I mean, you see this so often in not just the NBA, any sport. Anytime you go on a long road trip and you come back, that first home game is always a tough one to win, especially when you have to play LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. They beat them by 4 points. And the Cavs, kind of a team in turmoil as well, as they had a players-only meeting the other day. So what do we make of this team now, gents? They're 10-6. They've beaten LeBron James. They've beaten Kevin Durant. They've beaten Chris Paul. They've also lost to some mediocre teams. It's a tough one to figure out.
It's a work in progress, right? I mean, this is a team that's entirely different than last season when they had a bunch of ball-stopping shooters out there who couldn't play defense. You know, and this year they're trying to build a team that can play defense and that can play the type and style of game that you need to play to win in the playoffs, because other than, you know, the Golden State Warriors, I think you've got to be able to shut other teams down and play a lockdown game. And that's going to mean that when you're not shooting the ball well one night, you might lose that game. But hopefully you can hold your opponents to under 100 and something more like 94 and show improvement in that facet of the game on a game-by-game basis. I just said game a lot. But I mean, that's what they're trying to do, is build a playoff team, or a team that can win in the playoffs, not a team that can win in the regular season. Because really, wins in the regular season are meaning less and less, it seems like, every year now as the NBA changes its format.
Have they done that, Ryan? Is this team better equipped to win in the playoffs?
I think the point is that 3 months from now, they should be. As John said, it's a process, and they are a team in transition, because, I mean, they're in Washington today, and we all saw the way the Raptors were dismantled by that Washington team.
Even though they handled them during the regular season last year.
I feel like even early on, though, last year, early on meaning through the first couple months when the Raptors were really killing it, there was always that question hanging in the air of, can they play like this and win when it matters? And yeah. I think they were seen as a bit of a paper champion a little bit. And it's going to be a little uglier these days, and they are going to take their lumps. But it's nice when you can say, chances are we're going to make the playoffs. That then turns the regular season into 7 months when you can just really try and hammer things home without being completely concerned with your win-loss record. As long as you say, well, it's going to add up to a top eight spot in the East, what we really want to do is be a better team when these playoffs start in April than we are right now. And I think you could make the argument that with the personnel changes they made and the philosophical changes, the structural changes they made, they will be.
I don't know. Can we say for sure that they're a lock to make the playoffs? I mean, they're sitting fifth right now. They're just two games out of ninth. The Eastern Conference is better this year. Should there not be a renewed importance on regular season basketball in the Eastern Conference. And I get it, for teams like the Cavaliers, it must be tough to stay motivated because they're going to win their 60-plus games. The Western Conference, it's like this, where nobody's given any game away because, you know, if you're the San Antonio Spurs, it comes down to the final day of the season for playoff positioning, and you're forced to play the Clippers in the opening round. And clearly there's a little bit more import on regular season basketball. I don't know. We might be getting there with the Eastern Conference because the Raptors right now, even at 10-6, only sitting fifth, they would prefer not to play the Chicago Bulls, which would be their opponent right now if the season ended today.
It's not inconsequential, of course. You can't fall asleep at the wheel. I'm just saying that I think Toronto can look at its roster and say, well, unless things completely go to pot, we should be in a good spot.
But they've lost to some lousy teams. Like, I don't know. I just have a tough time wrapping my head around what they are exactly, John.
I think there seems to be at least a certain amount of playing down to opponents with this team
maybe
early on in the season. And that's how you end up losing to the Utah Jazz or blowing fourth quarter leads to the Sacramento Kings. I mean, these kinds of things happen, and hopefully they are teaching moments for Dwayne Casey where these guys are learning the lessons that, no, you've got to, you know, put your foot on their throat in the fourth quarter, and it doesn't matter if it's only Sacramento. And we think we are the Raptors, one of the class teams in the East. Well, you still got to finish the game, and you got to do that by playing lockdown defense and by playing the game that got you there for three quarters. And, you know, we've seen a little bit of them, this team, not doing that. But as Ryan said, I think it's a matter of you learn your lessons as the season goes on, and you're a better team at the end of it than you were at the beginning. And I would say that this team is a lock to make the playoffs. If they don't finish top five, I mean, something has gone seriously wrong. There has been injury woes. Dwayne Casey has lost his job, and it's a complete, like, reboot.
It's a situation where they've suffered their big injury already this season. They suffered a DeMar DeRozan injury last year, and they were able to get through it. Jonas Valanciunas is out for 6 weeks, and we knew that they would not be the same offensive club with Bismack Biyombo getting the nod at center to start games, but they would continue to be a good defensive team. Biyombo provided a little bit of offense against the Cavaliers. I think that's the outlier. Does it say something if they rattle off a whole bunch of wins without Jonas Valanciunas? Because I still think, and I have to be proven otherwise, that Jonas Valanciunas is a big part of this team going forward.
I think he's a huge part of the team going forward. I think to be successful, unless you have, you know, Durant and Westbrook or LeBron and Love or whoever your two superstars are in this league, you need a big presence down low. You need somebody who can eat up rebounds and, you know, is a double-double machine for you. And that's what JV was throughout much of last season, despite playing not a lot in the fourth quarter, and for this season for sure. So yes, an important piece. I think it'll be not easy is the wrong term, but not too difficult to overcome his loss in the short term. The key for me will be, how does he come back after missing, say, 6 weeks of action, and does he get back into the lineup, and is he the same JV he was when he went out? Because if he's not, then that whole notion of getting better as the season goes on, you know, that kind of throws a monkey wrench into things.
Raptors now perfect 3-0 on Drake night, which is it's a thing, Ryan. I think there was a lot of excitement when Drake arrived as the global ambassador of the Toronto Raptors. It's an official capacity, and Raptors have been dinged fine-wise because he is an official employee when Drake, you know, tampered with Kevin Durant a couple of years ago. But has it run its course? Is it still, like, exciting? I think it still makes broader North American sports news when he's at those games. Like, that's interesting to people when they have the hotline bling set and people can do their own videos at the Air Canada Center. People like that.
I thought you were going to say hotline bling box, and I was going to ask you to say it five times fast, but
you just did it.
I just did it. It's it raises the Raptors' profile. And in some way, it sounds strange to say of someone who has nothing to do with the actual game, but it kind of legitimizes them a bit, especially in a league that is more star-driven than any other, right? Like, we know the NBA, that's where the biggest stars are, or that's where the biggest stars get made relative to baseball, football, hockey, certainly. So why not have a big star at on the side of the court? You know, it is going to put you in on radars that you otherwise wouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, guys, Drake means nothing to me.
Really?
I'm not a huge fan. You know, it's not that I don't like hip hop, but I'm more of like the mid 90s guy, like what we just heard coming into this segment.
You never got in on pensive rap, on introspective rap.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. I agree with Ryan. If it raises the Raptors profile around North America, because Drake, he is a huge superstar. There's, you know, no doubt about that. Then great. Does he need to be an employee of the team? I don't think so. I mean, Jack Nicholson's not an employee of the Lakers, and Spike Lee doesn't work for the Knicks, but, you know, they raise those profiles too. So, I mean, yeah, if you can do it, great. What happens when Drake isn't as popular as he is these days? I don't know if he will still be the official ambassador for the Toronto Raptors. What happens if he does something stupid and gets busted for something, and how does that reflect on the team as an official team employee? I mean, I'm not saying he will, and I'm not saying he's the type of guy who would. I'm not trying to say anything like that, but you obviously take your chances when you bring on outside people to be part of your squad and, well, part of your franchise, I guess. But yeah, I mean, good on them.
I can't wait for his next track that rips you to shreds after this. Yeah. We'll be sure to play it on this program. When we return, Maple Leafs still doing better than we expected. And that's saying something, because they're still near the bottom of their division. Garrett Sparks has been called up as they get set to play the Washington Capitals. What does the future hold for William Nylander and Mitch Marner? We discuss, as well as a look around the NHL and a controversial cross-check to the back of the neck of Sidney Crosby. We'll break that one down and more coming up next. Ben Annis alongside Ryan Dixon and John Gregg at Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Over the horizon, she's smooth sailing these concrete seas. Now she headed east down the boulevard.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside Ryan Dixon and John Gregg. Maple Leaf news to pass your way. Goalie of the future, Garrett Sparks, been called up. Defenseman Scott Harrington assigned to the Marlies. So I guess that's bad news for James Reimer, who was a little dinged up in practice the other day. Maple Leafs getting set to play the Washington Capitals at the Air Canada Center Saturday night, Monday at home against the Edmonton Oilers. James Reimer's been the topic of much conversation recently because of his strong play and kind of out of nowhere. And the Maple Leafs have given Jonathan Bernier every opportunity to take the starting gig and run with it. And he did a couple of years ago, and at times he has, and certainly last year, everything went to pot, including the goaltending late in the season. But it's been an untenable situation where, I mean, we're almost into December and Bernier does not have a win, which is crazy. So here comes Sparks. I don't know where he factors into things, Ryan, but the Leafs goaltending has been real, real good. Maybe a bit of surprise, much like the Maple Leafs' competence this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, James Reimer, from the no easier guy to root for category, I mean, he might be the league leader in that category. The team has essentially done everything it can to alienate this nice, nice, sweet Manitoba boy, and all he's ever done is just smile and keep punching. And you know, you look at his numbers too. The times when it's been down, he had concussion problems. The team's been terrible. The times where he's either made them better or they've been playing better, he's got some pretty decent numbers. It is interesting because you think, just out of the names you mentioned, Bernier, Reimer, and now we're talking about Sparks. If you said, who's going to be the guy who, when this team starts to become what it hopes to become, who's going to be the goalie? Maybe the more likely candidate is Sparks, because by that time in a couple years, something has happened where Reimer moves on because he's a UFA this summer, or, you know, they realize that Bernier isn't what they thought he was. Maybe it is Sparks 2 years down the road. It'll be an interesting thing to watch. But for now, I think the bottom line is, to some degree, it doesn't really matter who plays net for the Maple Leafs, because that's not necessarily their primary concern.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to win games, and you like to see your young guys learning what it feels like to win. Not that many of them are actually on this team right now, but yeah, a couple of them are. And I mean, I think you're right, Ryan. I mean, this team's going to be good hopefully in 3 or 4 years. They don't need a great goaltender right now. And I mean, although who's not happy for James Reimer, who just put together arguably the best 10-game stretch in franchise history. But that being said, I would give Jonathan Bernier the start over Garrett Sparks every day of the week.
I think you have to find out. You have to give Bernier some runway here to try and get it back together, because the guy hasn't forgotten how to play goal. He has the yips. He can't make the throw from second to first right
now.
He's
Chuck Knobloch.
He is totally Chuck Knobloch right now, and that doesn't mean he's become a terrible goalie. So in this season where your record actually doesn't really matter, give the guy a pat on the back and say, get in there. Our other guy's not feeling well right now. For the next 2 weeks, that's how quickly things can turn.
Well, they just did for Reimer.
Yeah, exactly. Four or five games in a row, you get your mojo back. And you know what? I had said earlier that maybe Sparks was actually the most likely guy long term, but I still think there's something to scratch with Bernier to see if he's going to be your guy, because, and we've already done it on the show, but we keep defaulting to this 3-4 years down the road. I don't think it has to be that long for the Leafs, the way the NHL is now.
Let's get impatient.
Well,
This is a fun game.
It's more about how many guys they already have in the organization and how many they can acquire with one more draft of picking 9 times, because they're going to trade P.A. Parenteau for a second and they've already got some picks in their back pocket. Like, I'm just saying, we default to 5-year plan. And maybe when you're talking about actually winning the Stanley Cup, that's what you're talking about. But I have never bought that it's going to be that long. The other question I think is interesting to think about the Leafs that I'll pose is, do you think it's critical that they finish like 29th or 30th this year? Do you think it's critical that they draft first or second? Because I actually don't. And I'm usually the first to say, of any team that doesn't make the playoffs, you might as well finish 30th. And I suppose you might as well, in the least case, to give yourself the best chance at Auston Matthews. But based on all the draft picks they've already got, even just from 2015, when they'd picked, I think, 9 times, you've got Nylander, you've got Marner, you're still going to be picking high, you've got Morgan Riley already on the team, and most of all, it's critical that they start drafting well beyond the first round, which they haven't done at all for years and years and years. Like, it's scary when you look at the Leafs roster compared to other ones and say, wow, that guy, you know, Montreal got Brendan Gallagher in the 5th round. They got PK Subban in the 2nd round. If the Leafs start doing that even a little bit, then I actually don't think it's critical that they finish last. And I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing, as some people will paint it, that they're more competitive this year than people expected.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ryan. I mean, you got to build on something. You got to start somewhere. So you got to instill this philosophy into the roster as it is currently constructed and into the franchise from the top down. This is how we're going to play the game. This is the new Maple Leaf way. And if that translates to hard-fought, hard-scrabble wins and takes you out of the running for the top, top-end talent in the draft, that's okay. Because you're right. You've already got Mitch Marner at fourth overall. You've got Morgan Riley in the NHL as a sixth overall pick. You got William Nylander leading the American League in scoring at 19, who was a seventh overall pick.
Yeah, it's not like there's nothing there.
It's not like there's nothing there. So, but the
but
question
it would
is,
help to have another top pick.
No, I think that's gravy. Like, I think
it would be
great to draft Jacob Chychrun second or third overall, sure, and have like another horse on the blue line, or get real lucky and get Austin Matthews and have a ready-made number one center.
Sure.
But this team just needs to do the right things to move forward, which I think they're doing right now, and that's why it's not as bad as everybody thought it was going to be.
There was the big concern when people looked at this current brain trust, the Maple Leafs, is that they would fall into the old habits of this franchise and get impatient, right? Like, we've heard Brian Burke preach about patience a little bit, but then, you know, that didn't last very long. We've seen previous incarnations of general managers get into the danger zone of seeing that carrot of the playoffs and diverting away from the plan and going for it. So I think sometimes when you talk about this team maybe being ready, Ryan, sooner rather than later, that can scare people. But are you talking about diverting from the plan?
No, I mean that this rebuild, it can happen organically without going outside the organization and, for lack of a better way of putting it, like manipulating or tampering with things by going and trading for a 31-year-old whoever. In my mind, and maybe will be proven a sucker, but this felt different from the word go. Brendan Shanahan clearly took this job to be the guy who did what no one else has ever, to my knowledge, ever really tried in Toronto, saying we're doing the ground up. I'm saying I think the fruits of the rebuild can flower quicker than people realize. And that's also not just because there are already good players in the Leafs organization, it's because the league has changed and is skewing younger. And it's more like junior, where you can be terrible 4 years ago and really good, you know, now.
Especially when you have Steven Stamkos next season.
That's right.
Paint the rosy picture of 2016-2017. Come on. Do it.
So here are three things. No, but you know what? Now I have to backtrack on what I was just saying about how they don't have to draft first overall, but three things that individually seem within the realm of possibility, but collectively could probably never all happen. So we're all playing the Babcock game with Stamkos, right? We're all now officially saying the same thing people were saying about Babcock. Well, if he's going to say, why isn't he saying, you know, why isn't he signed already? Yeah. So there's clearly intrigue there. And if there was ever a guy to go out and blow the free agent what on, it's a guy who's, I think he's 25 right now. He's a 1990, right? So it'll be 26 in 2015-16. So they clearly is on the target. There's all this chatter that Jimmy Vesey, the Nashville drafted very good prospect center, scoring center, who's at Harvard, who's just not bothered to sign a pro contract with Nashville and remains in college and is now, you know, spitting distance from being a UFA who can pick his own destination. Of course, he just happens to have a dad in the Leafs organization and a brother as well. And then if the Leafs do clunk out completely and are drafting second, third overall, could you imagine a scenario where you add those three pieces from the team that doesn't have them now to 10 months from now having them? That would be, now, as I said, collectively, I think we can safely say all those things are going to happen. But it's funny that individually, at least saying it out loud on sports talk radio on a Saturday morning, none of them seem like completely insane concepts.
They don't. And you also look at things like William Nylander will be a Toronto Maple Leaf next season. There's no way they can keep him down for another year. If they can even keep him down for the rest of this season, although I'm a firm believer that they should, maybe give him a taste if injuries really pile up, but otherwise let him mature down there. Anyway, Mitch Marner will have to be a Maple Leaf next season because they're not going to send him back to junior to score 3 points a game. And Marlies team, it's not stacked with top six forwards and, you know, top pairing defensemen, but there's depth on that team. They're like 15-3. They are running away with things right now in the American Hockey League, and that is a sure sign of an organization that's doing things the right way. When you can, and granted, the Marlies have been a good team in the American Hockey League for a few years now, getting all the way to the Calder Cup final, I believe, a couple of years back. So, I mean, it's not a new thing, but
it's all about doing it with younger guys, right? And not the AHL mercenaries.
Right. 100%. They're not out there signing those Hershey Bears away from the Hershey Bears. They're doing it with draft picks and taking flyers on guys. And it's working. And it's creating, if anything at all, it creates competition within the organization. And it means that a guy like Corrado can't get into the lineup, but they can't send him down because they'll lose him on waivers, right? There's too many defensemen, young defensemen in this organization right now who could probably be playing in the NHL that there's just not enough room for them on the roster.
We saw good things from Stuart Percy on occasion.
Percy is another great example of he's learning the professional craft under a good coach and a good organization in the second best league in the world.
All this being said, I mean, I can't rule out anything that you just said, Ryan, and even the Stamkos thing, because we would have said the same thing about Mike Babcock arriving here in Toronto. Lou Lamoriello is the team's GM. I mean, a couple of years ago would have been heresy to say that out loud, but here we are. So you can't rule that out. All this being said, if you can manipulate it so that you do have another top pick, if you do have a good shot at Austin Matthews, shouldn't that be the route you go? Like, I don't know if you need to go around with the tire iron kneecapping guys,
if with 15 games left in the season, you have a legitimate chance to finish 30th, I think you find a reason to play the goalie you think is your second best goalie.
Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah, and you find a reason to call up maybe not your hot prospects from the AHL, no doubt, when you get to that point. No one can debate that. In a perfect world, you walk away with Austin Matthews. I'm just saying, as someone who probably for the last 10 years has been saying, you know what would be great for Toronto? It's a draft first overall. I actually don't think it's critical for this rebuild. I now see a path that it can unfold the way they want it to unfold without picking first or second overall. I feel like it is, like John said, it's kind of gravy at this point.
And we've seen where picking first overall over and over again doesn't work.
Sure.
Because not every first overall is Connor McDavid.
That's right. There's another example of you got to be able to draft after the first round.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And let's not forget that when the end of February rolls around, this team's going to be a seller.
Yeah.
You know,
you would hope.
The reason
goodness.
That they signed guys like P.A. Parenteau and traded for Nick Spaulding and Mike, they signed Grabner and Sean Matthias. Like, all these guys are like, they're just hoping they can perform and get second round or third round draft picks for.
Like, that's the scary scenario, though, is that they don't, like, they're so close to the playoffs and, like, P.A. Parenteau keeps racking up the power play goals that they hold on to him or something.
I think that if they are close to the playoffs, then they won't sell those guys. Because I think.
Oh, but that's horrible. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but doesn't.
Like, that's a nightmare scenario to me.
I don't think it's a nightmare if you're going to finish like 8th in the East versus 10th in the East, and then you get to get Morgan Riley some playoff experience. I mean, it's not if it's a difference between finishing 8th in the East and 30th overall, then yes, then that's a nightmare scenario. But there's nothing wrong with giving guys the experience they need to, you know, to learn how to make the playoffs and how playoff hockey is different. That being said, they are not going to make the playoffs. This is not even, we shouldn't even be having this debate because they don't have the talent on the roster as it's currently constructed to score enough goals to make the playoffs.
But
it's just not going to happen.
We know the nerds would tell you that the goals will come, especially from guys like Nazem Kadri. So if that does happen.
Sure, but at some point, and like, I like to look, I'm into analytics, not as much as everybody, but more than some. And yes, I know that Nazem Kadri is generating scoring chances, and yes, he's got a high volume of shots. At some point, you got to score. Like, it's the counting stats that actually count in hockey.
John Gregg, it's the counting stats that actually count.
I mean, you do actually have to score.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, he's shooting 2.7% at 5-on-5 or something like that right now. And it's horrendous. And, yes, it will not stay that low. He will get better. But he's on pace for 30 points this season. He's your number one center. I mean, things will turn, but not that much. I mean, maybe this guy just can't shoot. Maybe he can throw a lot of, like, pillows at the net, but, you know, nothing's going in because he's got a crappy shot.
Do you think he's a good number two center? Would you pencil him in and say, let's assume Marner ends up playing wing at the NHL and we'll assume William Nylander is your number one center? Do you think Kadri slots in well as a two?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he would be an awesome number three center. And he'd be a good number two. And he's also a UFA or an RFA coming up again. And, you know, I don't know how much you want to invest in this guy.
Well, yeah.
Is he in your top six in the future?
Because that's where it gets tricky with guys who are not young but not old, is if their contract is up. So JVR, I think, he's still signed for a while, right? There's no real...
Yeah, he's through 2018.
Yeah, there's no real pressure point there. Like, I guess if you wanted to move him because you could get a killing, sure, why not? But ultimately, you can still look at him and go, well, he signed to a pretty team-friendly deal, and he's still young enough that, as we just talked about, if you think you're going to be competitive in 2 years, then why not keep him around? Where it gets tricky is, well, what do we offer this guy? Well, you know, now we have to make a decision on what we think he is right now.
Well, you're already paying 4.1.
So you're not...
He's gonna
going
to want more.
Yeah.
It's got to go up from there. So, I mean, and would you pay $5 million a year for your number two center? Yeah, I think so.
If he was a good hockey team, sure.
Yeah, you'd pay that, no problem. But your number two center has to perform outside of just generating scoring chances and you know, having good underlying numbers. And so far, Nazem Kadri is not doing that. And he's the main reason right now why this team can't score goals, because their number one center can't score goals.
It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, John Gregg, Ryan Dixon. More positivity for you on the Tape to Tape podcast. Ryan Dixon, Rory Boylan, as I imagine you're a bucket of sunshine on that podcast, Ryan.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So check that out on iTunes and Sportsnet.ca. Speaking of dollars and contracts and the future, James Reimer's a UFA at the end of this season. What do they do with this guy? Because there's been reports that the market's heating up for him, and why not for a guy who is not going to tie you down? Because, as mentioned, he's a UFA at the end of the season, and he's on an incredible pace right now. Jonathan Bernier is under contract next season. What do the Maple Leafs do with this guy, Ryan?
I think if you can get a second-round pick for him, you have to look really hard at that, because my yes or no on is James Reimer going to be the guy when they turn a corner is still, I don't think so. But I could see, it all comes down to what does Reimer want? What is he in a position to ask for? Because could I see signing him to another 3-year deal for about what he makes right now? Yeah, absolutely. I could, no doubt. But I still don't think it's going to be a here's the keys to the franchise situation. But I don't think that's necessarily, you know, goaltending is not something they have to sort out right now. What you're not going to do is lock yourself into something. So, yes, 2 years, maybe three, but are you going to go out there and hand out a big contract right now? Hard to imagine.
Yeah, and he's not going to want backup money again, right? He's going to want to at least match Bernier, who's at 4.1.
Are you
going to put $8.2 million into your goaltending right now?
James Reimer goes to the open market and gets anywhere even close to $4 million, I'd be shocked.
I don't think, if he keeps this up, you know, he might.
If he has a 9.35 save percentage at the end of the year, I suppose it's possible, but
I thought you were going to say you're going to eat your hat.
I don't think he will probably garner that enough interest to get 4.1, but I mean, I don't see any goalie in this. I haven't seen enough of Sparks, but I don't see Bernier or Reimer as the key components to a championship team anyway. So, yeah, if you can move them and get a second-round pick or something of value,
yeah, it's not necessarily a reflection on Reimer as much as where the Leafs are.
Yeah, you don't. We've been saying it. You don't need a goalie right now, and you probably don't need one for 2 or 3 years. And the way goalies move around teams and the success stories that come out of nowhere and also the stories of woe that where you're expecting success, they happen all the time. You can get goalies and take flyers on guys in this league. You're not going to get Carey Price or Henrik Lundqvist, that's for sure, but you know nobody is. You have to develop those guys and lock them up, and those guys don't move.
Although the Oilers haven't found theirs yet.
No, and I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm also not saying, you know, the Oilers have been so poorly managed for like a decade that they haven't found anything yet except how to lose,
yeah.
Right? You know, and they took a flyer on Cam Talbot this year. His numbers aren't great. The team in front of him is not very good either. It's not like they're, you know, loaded for bear and ready to go and playing a lockdown system. I mean, it's a bunch of kids still out there trying to score goals, and there's not really any defense. But then you look at Freddie Anderson in Anaheim, slaying, right? Martin Jones in San Jose, slaying. These guys are out there to be had, and you can find them when you need them, and you don't need them in Toronto right now.
The NHL, we have not seen, and usually we see this in the postseason, the crazy play that deserves serious discipline and carries over into the broader sports media, and you got the American sports media talking about how violent a sport hockey is. We haven't seen that to this point. And this is not an example of that, but Brandon Dubinsky Friday night with a cross check to the back of the neck of Sidney Crosby. Crosby left the game, apparently not serious, but it's still a hockey stick to the back of a dude's neck. He's going to have a hearing with the NHL Board of Player Safety. So I imagine there'll be some sort of supplemental discipline. Is that warranted? Is that a serious offense? Does it say something that we're talking more severely about a play like that in 2015 than we would have probably in 2010? Do we even talk about it in 2010, or are we only talking about it because it's Sidney Crosby?
I think you probably shouldn't cross-check guys in the neck.
Probably.
I think that's probably a pretty good mantra to live by, whether you're playing road hockey or NHL hockey. It doesn't help that it's Sidney Crosby, and it doesn't help that it comes with Brandon Dubinsky and Crosby, who have, you know, a short, but still they have a record with each other in the playoffs. I mean, I just think it's just a dumb move, and, you know, then he stands over him and kind of looks, gives him another shot and a little bit of a gloat, and then skates away. I mean, yeah, he should have some, there should be some discipline, and it's his own fault for cross-checking anyone, let alone Sidney Crosby, in the back of the deck.
We've seen some former players defend the play. We've seen most of the hockey media talk about how it deserves some sort of supplemental discipline. Ryan, is it? I can't get over the fact. I think that we're looking at this a little differently in 2015 than we would have 5 years ago.
No doubt. The landscape has changed. There's no two ways about it.
There's no fights anymore.
No. And that's why when we're talking about the Leafs being able to rebuild quicker, it's because the league is gone to young, skilled players. And yes, I think we view these things differently. And I would say it's really taken off in the last, probably 2-3 years. We just don't see things through the same lens that we once did. And there are any number of plays that you might not even really have given a passing thought to, or certainly not thought, well, this guy deserves to miss some games. And the way things that really have nothing to do with the act of trying to score a goal and play the game are viewed now, it's just different.
And listen, we all know those sticks break easy.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's It didn't look like, you know, he wasn't hammering at the back of his neck, right? It wasn't that bad, but it's just a stupid play.
I find it funny that we're parsing, like, how hard a guy hit a guy in the neck with a stick. Like, he hit a guy in the back of the neck with a stick. You can kill a guy that way, like, if you hit him hard enough.
That's kind of the point I was trying to make off the top as well. You're just more eloquent than I.
Oh, okay.
You don't cross-check people in the neck. You just don't do it. Or you could expect a suspension, especially when you're cross-checking Sidney Crosby in the neck. Like, it's ridiculous.
It is, certainly. And I'd be surprised if we don't see some sort of suspension. When we return, it's Grey Cup weekend, which is, listen, we don't pay a ton of attention to the CFL around these parts, but it's the Grey Cup. Come on. New commissioner, his first real address to the media was an interesting one. We'll break it down, and we'll look ahead to what 2016 has in store for this league, especially with the Toronto Argonauts playing in a new stadium down at BMO Field. Is that enough to rejuvenate that franchise, which, I don't know, is it still key to the overall long-term health of the CFL? All that and more coming up next. Ben Ennis, John Gregg, Ryan Dixon, Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Stephen Blunt.
Pac-Man, Pacquiao, Floyd, Money Mayweather.
That was the biggest sporting event in the world this year. The fight of the century, a decade in the making. In the lead-up, Mayweather-Pacquiao set records in every way that boxing can. It was to be the Ali Frazier or Tyson Holyfield of its time. And everyone had an opinion, at least until the bell rang. That it didn't live up to the hype almost didn't matter, because it reminded the sporting world how big a big fight can be. And those are the kinds of moments that create memories that last a lifetime. Like welcoming the world to the Women's World Cup and Pan Am Games, cheering on our athletes and witnessing greatness along the way, or watching Serena Williams stretch for yet another return and win title after title, or waiting for the Stanley Cup to arrive so Jonathan Toews can raise it in front of a home crowd for the first time in 77 years. And of course, that little bat flip in the seventh inning of Game 5 of the ALDS.
The 1-1. Bautista drives it. Deep left field. Gone! The Blue Jays dugout has erupted as they greet Bautista at the edge of the track. Suddenly it is 6-3 for Toronto.
It's those moments and dozens more of the most breathtaking and heartbreaking from 2015 that we celebrate in our fifth annual Year in Sports special edition.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine on newsstands now.
2015 Stanley Cup champions are the Chicago Blackhawks.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, John Gregg. We'll get to the Grey Cup in just a second and the future of the CFL. But a couple of things I want to touch on in the NHL. The Travis Hamonic thing still hanging over the heads of the New York Islanders. And that's a real tradable commodity. I don't know how it changes his market. It's probably not a good thing for the Islanders when they know they have to move him. At least try to move him, and they have to move him to a certain spot when your market is limited, and your hand is forced. It's tough to work out your best deal for a guy who should command a pretty sizable return, John.
It's like if Edwin Encarnacion demanded a trade and you couldn't trade him to anyone in the National League, and right. you didn't want to trade him to anyone in the AL East. It's such a limited number of teams.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's actually lasted this long. From all accounts, Travis Hamonic is a very good hockey player and like a top two or top four defenseman on a playoff-worthy team, and there's no doubt that there are a number of teams out there who would like to have that kind of player. And I'm surprised that somebody just hasn't come and been like, okay, I got this piece that I know you could probably use or peddle at a later date. Let's get this guy off your roster and put him on ours.
It's because the Islanders want Travis Hamonic back,
yes.
right? That's what's making it tricky, because if you're a team out there and you're adding Hamonic, you're looking at your defense core going, if we add this guy, we really got something. But if you add this guy but take out someone of equal value, then it's kind of a wash, right? So I do wonder if this one ends up being a three-way trade where you bring someone else into the mix so that everyone maybe gets what they want. But in terms of, like, for those however handful of many teams that fit the bill theoretically, geographically, of where he wants to go, I guess maybe Calgary could say, well, we could give up one of our defensemen, bring him in, and we're a little further ahead. But I think as long as the Islanders want someone who is essentially the same player as they're giving up, this is going to be tricky.
Yeah, and I think, and Gar Snow, for all of his follies in years past, has turned into a pretty damn good GM.
He's made some shrewd moves.
And, you know, people have floated names like Chris Tanev out of Vancouver. Apparently, the Islanders asked for TJ Brody and were told, get out of our face in Calgary. And but, you know, when you hear something like Justin Schultz and Jordan Eberle for Travis Hamonic, like, if that's actually true, then you jump on that immediately, right?
Sure.
Because then, you get Jordan Eberle.
Yeah.
Right? And it might almost be like you have to take Justin Schultz if you want Jordan Eberle, but at least you get a warm body, and then you get Eberle. And you know what that means? You can trade Okposo, who's not going to resign with you more than likely next season.
Yeah, you can move some pieces around.
Maybe you get your defenseman for him.
Yeah.
The New York Rangers are 16-5-2, despite a couple of losses to the Canadiens and the Boston Bruins. Bruins on a nice little run as of late, thanks to a couple of wins over the Maple Leafs. But that's a team, and I know, Ryan, you've followed the Montreal Canadiens real closely. So this probably looks familiar to you, what the Rangers are doing this year.
Yeah, they're Habs 2.0 a little bit, because, of course, last year the Canadiens were up near the top of the Eastern Conference standings, but everyone was pointing toward the underlying numbers and talking about how much of it was goalie driven. And that right now, that is really the case with the Rangers. Henrik Lundqvist, who tends to be a slow starter, has been just fantastic. Some say playing as well as he ever has in his career, but that Rangers lineup that you look at, and, you know, at least on paper, you think, man, they got a lot of speedy, I mean, Rick Nash he had a great year last year. He's an elite goal scorer, but mostly what they have is a bunch of sort of mid-range production guys, but top to bottom, really quick guys, strong defense core. You would think that they'd be a team that would be able to drive the play, would be able to keep the puck, but I mean, they're dead last in some possession metrics. So it'll be interesting to see where things go. They got shellacked by the aforementioned Habitant earlier this week, and lost a tight one to Boston, I believe, yesterday.
Yep.
So, yes, maybe a little bit of a course correction. If you ask me to lay a nickel today, though, I think the Rangers are still going to be a pretty good. They're going to be in the thick of it when the Eastern Conference playoffs start.
Yeah, they've got a pretty good cushion as of right now.
They do.
It'll be interesting to see how the loss of Derek Stepan, what that means for that team, because he's kind of one of the more underrated players in the league. He hasn't been putting up massive numbers this year, but he is pretty much their number one center, right? I mean, in terms of a 200-foot guy. So we'll see what happens there. And you're right. I mean, all those underlying numbers are horrendous. So we'll see if it comes back to bite them.
Yeah, and you wonder if this is a team that knows how to play the right way. They just aren't, because they know they have Henrik Lundqvist back there. And at some point, if things get dire, if they don't change their play, although it has not been real pretty from an analytics standpoint, first couple of months of the regular season. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, and John Gregg. It's the 103rd Grey Cup on Sunday from Winnipeg, and apparently the weather's actually going to be reasonable, which kind of sucks. Like, come on, let's be honest here.
It's just more fitting, isn't it?
It's Winnipeg. If it's only -3, that's kind of lame. Ottawa Red Blacks
Cold for mosquitoes, but
yes,
too warm for snow.
Yeah, and their second year of existence since returning to the CFL in the Grey Cup game against the Edmonton Eskimos. Viewership is down this season overall in the CFL, and it's, I don't know, we spent a lot of time on this radio station. Well, actually, we don't spend a lot of time because we don't talk CFL very often, but when we do, it's in a slagging way, and I don't want to do that because, hey, the Grey Cup is still an institution in this country, and it's still a big thing, the regular season out west.
A lot of people are going to watch the Grey Cup. Of that, there's no doubt.
Yeah, there isn't, but is there a way to save the CFL in this city? Does it need saving in this city?
I think it does, because I think that even if the majority of people in Toronto don't care about the CFL, it's still by far the largest market in the country. You need people to actually show up. I mean, the Argos were last in average attendance at like 12,400 this year. Like that's really bad, right? Like that's like Atlanta Thrashers numbers.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how you get a team moved out of a market. And, you know, you can't have that in a city this large. I mean, if you can't find 23,000 people to show up to a sporting event in Toronto, then you've got real, real issues. And it's just, you know, in the TV market, you just, for the overall health of the league, you have to have a strong franchise in Toronto.
They move to BMO Field next year. And Ryan, I mean, is that in itself going to be enough to draw people to these games, or do they have to do something outside of the actual football product?
They have to make it an event. They have to make it something that you think, hey, it's a nice sunny day, I'm going to watch a football game. That has to drive going more than, hey, I'm a Turbo Argos fan, so I'm going to go watch CFL football. If you can make it a palatable, affordable, fun option for a family to do on a Sunday in August, then I think it can help. It is at least going to be a bit of a nicer setting. So given all the trials and tribulations of CFL football in Toronto, if moving them to BMO was all it was ever going to take, I'll be shocked. But it at least feels like a step in the right direction.
Isn't that kind of what the Blue Jays have become? They've become, and certainly there are a lot of baseball fans in this city, but isn't it also now a thing to do for people who have maybe not been even sports fans their entire lives to go down on a sunny day in the middle of summer to go watch the Blue Jays, or, you know, half watch the Blue Jays, but mostly down a couple in the patio in center field?
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right. And that's what you can still get, provided your tickets are somewhat affordable. So
it's the same as TFC, right? I mean, that's a success story in itself as well, because it's people who are not necessarily MLS fans or even soccer fans will go to that.
Oh, I don't know. It's an event. I think that it's just a lot of soccer fans that needed an outlet in this city.
I don't think so necessarily. I think you're right in the fact that there are soccer fans in this city who needed an outlet, and they've embraced that team as well as anybody could have hoped. But I also think that there are people who are just interested in going to and spending a nice day in the sun and watching something and being part of an event. And those people are also going to those games.
I'd just like to see the sun again one day, because it feels like it's never going to return. It will, though, I imagine. The Ottawa Redblacks and Edmonton Eskimos doing it up in the Grey Cup game in Winnipeg on a Sunday. That'll do it for us. For Ryan Dixon, John Gregg, I'm Ben Ennis. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.